The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 913. It's the 2nd of November, 2017. And I've got to say, if you're a regular listener, if you listen now and again, thank you very much. We've just hit several milestones as far as listeners are concerned on a daily, weekly and monthly and all-time basis. So thank you very much. And don't forget, if you enjoy it, please share it. Okay, on the podcast today, we have Brian McMaster, chairman of Jan Garden Mines. That's J-A-N ticker. And Brian discusses the potential of their PGM project in Brazil after the release of the results from their recent scoping study. Also, Stephen Blythe, CEO of Expediator, the integrated freight management group, discusses their recent acquisition and half-year report. I also have Chris Bailey, founder of Financial Orbit, covering BT, results from them out, Royal Dutch Shell, RDSB, of course, and Rango Resources. And Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Andalas Energy and Power, ADL that is, Conviviality, CVR, and Volex, VLX. And as usual, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Brian McMaster, Executive Chairman of Jan Garden Mining. That's J-A-N ticker. Brian, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, you've had some recent news out. The story is developing here, and you're relatively still new to the market. So for people not aware of Jan Garden Mines, Brian, can you just give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yeah, sure can. So Jan Garden is a company that listed on AIM in the last week of June this year, so only several months ago. And we own South America's largest and most advanced PGM, which is Platinum Group Metals Project. Since listing, we've made several announcements, you know, talking about upgrades to the resource through the introduction of byproduct credits and various other things. And today we've released a scoping study, which we promised the market back at the time of listing that we would do.
Yeah, so take us through the scoping study. And also, there's a lot going on here. Like you said, there's a lot of credits going on here. And so explain, first of all, the scoping study, and you know, we'll get on to what's next there.
Yeah, sure. So we've owned this project privately for several years, and prior to us owning it, it had had about 13 years in the Anglo-American stable, and they spent a lot of money and a lot of time and did a lot of work. So there was always a lot of advanced data available for the project, and you know, we've gone back and independently reanalyzed some of that data, and we've done some further test work of our own. And you know, the scoping study which we've released today reveals a really quite outstanding set of fundamentals. Basically, the study concludes in essence that we can put together a mine producing about 34,000 ounces of PGM plus gold per annum for a cost of circa $38 million, which is a payback period of just over 1 year and an internal rate of return of 80%. Gives a net present value of the project today at a 10% discount rate of $150 million, which, you know, benchmarks against our market cap of about 15. So it sort of puts us, you know, 10 times current market cap. So it really is an outstanding start to what we always thought was a solid project.
Yeah, and so for people not aware, I mean, you talked about credits and all this stuff. There's cobalt there, there's copper there, there's a lot of stuff there. But can you explain what this means to the economics of the project, please, Brian?
Yeah, so effectively, I mean, the project is, you know, PGM plus gold, which means we're hoping to extract platinum, palladium and gold. But through that extraction process, we expect to recover credits for byproducts, and the byproducts include nickel, copper, chrome and cobalt. And we have substantial quantities of all of those. We've announced this previously, but, you know, we have sort of in the order of over 100 million pounds of nickel already, 23 million pounds of copper, 6 million pounds of cobalt. I mean, they are substantial, you know, volumes. And things like cobalt, for example, at the moment are highly prized and in short supply. And that's an example of something we think that the market hasn't quite caught on to yet. And in the next few weeks, we expect to release a some metallurgy test work results, which will, you know, give people a better indication of expected of what a circuit will look like to process this ore and what expected recoveries will be. And that'll start to really, I think, you know, sharpen people's attention to what's really going on down there.
Yeah, and when do you hope to start producing here then, Ryan?
Well, you know, the timetable we laid out in the IPO is sort of looking like it's going to come to fruition. So the basic plan of attack from here is, you know, as I said, we'll release the test work results, you know, in the next, you know, few weeks or so. We've promised the market a PFS, which will be a refinement of these numbers early in the new year. And, you know, sort of circa Q1 next year, we anticipate to be in a position to go into trial mining. And, you know, we've got our application processes for the trial mining permit sort of, you know, kicking off. And, you know, we've been receiving some really positive feedback from the government in Brazil about sponsoring the project through because of its development potential and that sort of thing. So I think those timetables are realistic. So, you know, let's call it end of Q1 next year. We should see some, you know, trial mining activity. And then from there, we'd expect to go into development.
Yeah, yeah. And it's worth pointing out, you know, you're in Brazil and, you know, normally some of these big PGM producers are in South Africa, which is, has its issues, doesn't it, you know?
Well, we think that's one of the, you know, the real keys to all of this is, I mean, you know, you read a lot in the press about the intricacies of, you know, PGM supply and demand and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, whether that's true or false, who I'm not sure anybody really knows. But fundamentally, one of the overarching issues is that the majority of PGM activity in the world at the moment is in South Africa. It's a very well-trodden path to understand the production and labour issues that the South African mines face. And, you know, we will be one of the very rare non-South African PGM producers. So we have, you know, a really good advantage in that respect.
Yeah. And also it's worth noting, you know, you have a further 44 exploration licenses spanning 55,000 hectares. So there's lots of forward potential here, isn't there?
Yeah, so we've put together a resource at the moment of 1 million ounces of PGM plus gold, which is off four deposits that we've been working on in particular and that we've modelled. In addition to those four deposits, we have another sort of 7 to 10 deposits which we know have mineralisation, but we just haven't got to evaluating in detail yet because, you know, based on the current scoping study, we've got a life of mine of 13 years, so we sort of took a view that, you know, that's economic, so there's no need to go and spend money at this early stage doing exploration work when we've got, you know, 13 years of life ahead of us, so we can do the exploration a little bit further down the track. But we have done sufficient work to know that there is PGM mineralisation there, so, you know, we have every expectation to consider that one of two things can happen. We can either continue to produce at this rate of 35,000 ounces per annum for, you know, decades to come, or more likely, we can scale up to being a more substantial producer, somewhere in the order of 100,000 ounces per annum.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, Brian, well, if anyone's listening to this and they like the sound of this project, but are not yet following you, as you're still pretty much newly listed, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, I think, you know, the first of those reasons is summarised in today's scoping study with the economics. I mean, frankly, when was the last time you saw a project with an 80% IRR payback of about 1 year and, you know, an NPV of 10 times the current market cap in a company which is run by people who have demonstrated that they have, you know, have got the ability to get these things done. So I think that's, you know, the first thing. Secondly, as I said a moment ago, you know, the fundamentals of PGM remain, and, you know, as things in South Africa worsen, the need to find PGM assets outside of the country amplifies, and that's a very important macro consideration that needs to be considered. And thirdly, I think, you know, people shouldn't underestimate just how close we are to going into production. You know, the newsflow we have over the coming months will only serve to demonstrate that we are achieving our goals. And, you know, these prices, I expect, won't be seen again anytime soon. So if you want to be on the train, it's kind of now or never, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff, Brian. Good to chat. And like I say, you've got a busy couple of months ahead of stuff happening. So no doubt we'll chat again very soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator. Ticker there is XPD. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, pleasure.
Now, for people not aware of you, and I've had a guest on previously mention you in a good light, but for people not aware of Expediator, can you give a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please, Stephen?
Yes, we're an asset-light freight forwarding and logistics business, operating primarily in the Central and Eastern European area and, of course, the UK. The business is split down into three main divisions. We have our freight forwarding division, which has been transporting to and across Europe since 1988. We have a particular emphasis on textiles. Our affinity division is a division where we act as a reseller and we provide fuel cards, cross-channel ferries to around about 1,500 truckers who run 11,500 trucks. Some of those customers on our affinity division are also suppliers on our freight forwarding division. The third division that we have is our logistics division, which is primarily based in Romania and the UK. In Romania, we have the franchise called Palex from the UK, a very successful pallet operation within Romania. Started in January 2012. And currently we're running almost 50,000 pallets a month, highly profitable, and we're expanding that into the Hungarian market where we have the franchise.
Right.
So those are the three main divisions.
Excellent stuff. And, you can forgive some people for not hearing of you because you've only been listed since August, but you've had a busy year already. And let's go back to October and talk about the acquisition. Take us through some of the detail there, please, Stephen.
Well, we did our first acquisition before we listed in March. Mm-hmm. And we acquired a UK textile company who does garment distribution and processing, and that links in very much to our international transportation. So we bring in a lot of textiles for Arcadia, Primark, and so that links our international with our domestic. In October, we acquired a company called Benfleet, mm-hmm. very well established freight forwarder, also in Essex, started in 1987. Great synergies working together. Quite excited about how we can develop that over the next few years.
Excellent stuff. And I see the share price has been going very well since you listed, looking at the chart here.
We listed at 24p, 35% growth to today's date. Earlier on this week, we announced the two franchises signed for Albania and Cyprus on our eShop WeDrop project. This project connects overseas consumers who want to buy products from sites in the UK, Poland, Germany, Italy, Spain, and we're opening up a Dropbox solution in America. And this is B2C activity, which goes on the back of our B2B activity. E-commerce is the future growth area for the business. This, I think, has the potential to be the most important part of the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and looking at your market cap, it's showing around about 35 million. And for the 6 months ended 30th of June, your revenue there was a tad under 50 million. And you did a profit after tax of just over half a million. Now, this growth is a 56% increase in revenue. That's quite impressive. And is growth continuing there, Stephen?
We will continue to have strong organic growth. There's a shortage of truckers forecast in the European market. We have a massive database of truckers, and therefore we think we're well positioned to take advantage of what we think will be an increase in price and margin. The basic laws of supply and demand will kick in, and we feel comfortable that we will have the supply with our long-standing relationships with truckers, and of course our affinity database of 1,500 truckers running 11,500 vehicles. We think we're well placed to take advantage of that, and we are doing more and more full load activity. So we see that growth continuing organically as well as by acquisition.
Yeah, and I hate to mention the B word, but obviously you're in Europe, and you're that's a big part of your business there. Yeah. But how do you see the Brexit factor affecting business?
Brexit for us, we have a record of doing a lot of customs clearances in the past, so we're very familiar with that. One of the reasons to do the acquisition of Benfleet is that they have a Dover office, as well as a Felixstowe office, and we'll be preparing for a hard Brexit should it come along, and be in a reasonably good position to take advantage of customs clearances. So for us, Brexit is not a concern. We see Brexit as a profit potential for us going forward.
Excellent stuff. And as far as acquisitions are concerned, what is your strategy here, Stephen?
I have several things we're looking at, not only in the UK but also within Europe, that will be good bolt-on acquisitions for our existing activity. We have a set criteria as to how we'll be doing acquisitions, and we want to follow in general the same path that we've done on the first acquisition, and watch this space.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, it sounds very exciting, and you've kicked off your listing on AIM quite impressively with a nice rise in the share price, and you sound confident and of the business growing. So if someone's listening right now, Stephen, and they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, can you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, we are a very dynamic company. I'm the oldest person in the company, but we have some very, very talented young people across Central Eastern Europe and the UK. We are expecting to have very good organic growth, plus the M&A activity that we're going to be doing. I expect the share price to reflect that good work that the teams are doing. That in itself is a good reason to follow us. We're also very innovative as a business, as you can see from our award-winning eShop We Got project. And we will continue to try and be at the forefront of those developments.
Excellent, Stephen.
I'm not sure that's two or three. I think it's probably two.
Well, that's fine. Do you know what? I think that's plenty. Plus, of course, you've talked about other positive factors that I'm sure will encourage people to want to do some more research on you. So that's great stuff, Stephen.
Yeah,
good
sure.
to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of FinancialOrbit.com. It's Chris Bailey. You're right, Chris.
Hello. Yes, very well, Justin. Very well, yes.
You are my learned eyes and ears on the bigger space, bigger market cap space of the bigger stocks there, the FTSE 100, etc. And so what has been reporting today? I know one has, Chris. I know BT have, and it's annoying me. They've dropped again just on the they opened up about 2.5% up, and I thought, oh, this looks quite promising. I mean, because let's be honest, they've fallen by a lot in the last year or so, and I thought it's all priced in now. Surely it's all priced in. And so they started rising, and now they've softened a bit. They've gone into the red.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, BT's very out of favour at the moment. Look, you look at today's numbers and, what's the important takeaways? The first is that they did reiterate their hopes. So that's always a tick in the box. However, when you sort of looked at the numbers a bit more in depth, yes, revenues were under pressure. Yes, earnings were down. Sure, we know they're investing in their business, be it in BT Sport, be it in the broadband side, be it obviously in the integration integration of EE, which obviously is a big opportunity over the medium term. Mm-hmm. So as always with companies where there's big investment plans or a big integration, sometimes the short-term numbers can be impacted. And obviously there are some competitive pressures as well BT are facing. Still problems with that European business of theirs, which wasn't very good. And they had that big fraud in Italy, of course, they uncovered a year or so ago. So you sort of put it all together. And I thought I was quite heartened by the tone of the BT numbers. The dividend, I guess, is going to be the dividend and the pension are two sort of sticky points and certainly areas of interest. Look, on the dividend, they edged it up as the weekend press reports indicated. They are moving, I noticed, next year to a different structure where they'll pay 30% of the overall dividend in the interim stage and the rest at the end of the full year, at the end of March. Now, whether that's concerned a few people that they're going to slide in a dividend cut as a consequence, that will no doubt come out on the conference call. As for the pension, big pension deficit, of course, two things there. Number one, lots of press reports that they're going to be offering a less generous pension scheme. My observation would be actually moving to something much more in line with what most companies are offering today. You know, they've gone from very generous to slightly less generous. Number two, of course, with the pension scheme, you've got a big review coming up. And the big thing there is the assumptions you make. These very ultra low bond yields that we've seen over the last few years, they're an absolute killer for pension schemes just because of the way it impacts your discounted value. Mm-hmm. So if we do see a rise in bond yields, and obviously later today, potentially the Bank of England are going to raise rates, you'd have thought that would tend to, if it does anything, push bond yields up, then that could give a little bit of relief on the pension side. But yeah, lots of ifs and buts and whatever. The conference call is starting shortly as we speak. I think that's going to be influential. Certainly, it's out of favour. You can see that by the share price move. Yeah. But let's see what a bit more detail gives.
Yeah, yeah. And they did say that, they have changed the dividend a little bit, like you said, 30% of prior full year's dividend. But they said progressive dividend policy unchanged, which is quite nice, isn't it? I mean, you know,
yeah,
people
that's
are,
right. No, they were talking about a 10% increase, or that was the aim and effort. Mm-hmm. Progressive obviously means going up. You know, you look at the static yield of BT stock, and it's pushing, you know, well above 6% at the moment. And, you know, that is striking at a time, obviously, when interest rates are extremely low. Of course, as with any big dividend yield, sustainability becomes the next question. And this is why issues about things like their turnaround plan with EE, what that does to their business in terms of earnings, and the whole pension discussions become hugely important.
Yeah, but do you know what? It's a catch-22, isn't it, really? Because if they pay a good dividend and they stick by that progressive dividend policy, then people will see that as long as the figures aren't a nightmare, which they aren't really, I mean, obviously they're going through a bit of a change here, but you know, you will get people jumping on board for the dividend. But it's like Royal Dutch Shell, you know, it acts as a springboard, a sort of safety net, doesn't it? Because when it gets to like, you know, 5-6%, people start jumping in. As long as the company keeps saying, underlining that the dividend is progressive, is continuing, is fine, and that helps the share price a bit, doesn't it? Now, if they're going to sort of scrap that dividend or change it, you know, markedly, then people will start jumping out then, and you see the share price go down. But yeah, even though the dividend costs them lots of money, it does create that sort of, doesn't it, safety net for the share price, you know?
It does, but, you know, how should you interpret the share price move of the last year? You should interpret it as not only are earnings going to be lower, which obviously has an impact on your valuation, but also people's scepticism about their ability to maintain that dividend has increased. And so that starts to get factored in. They've got a new chairman starting right now at BT, and he's actually been supportive of the CEO and by definition supportive of the various policies. But clearly, if things don't change soon, then they'll have to discuss and consider other options. And that's what the share price is telling you. There is general market scepticism. So this is why I think the thing with BT, certainly what I'll be doing later on today, is having a look at what they said on the conference call, pacing through their presentation slides, seeing if I can discern a bit more on what they're thinking.
Yeah, do you know what? It's just they're completely oversold on the RSI there. But I'm looking at their price now. They weren't at this level Last time at this level was in 2013, July 2013, that was last time at this level. And she'd say, you know, it is major oversold level. What will turn it around? That's the thing. And maybe this new chairman coming in or some guy, I don't know. But I mean, you know, it's due for a bounce, you know, on a technical level, it's due for a bounce. And
I would absolutely concur. Mm. It's very out of favour. What you might get sometimes is, particularly as we get moved towards the end of the year, at the end of the year, you often have this sort of, these big portfolio managers, they start saying things like, what stocks don't we want to show at the end of the year in our portfolios because they've been rubbish? So they tend to sell the lower performers, the bad performers, and often they top up on the good performers. Now, that is completely bonkers from any medium-term value perspective, but these are the short-term pressures of the market. And, you know, you may be seeing a little bit of that as well. This is an untrendy share to hold, and as a consequence, you've got to move through that period before it starts to recover. I would agree, though, from a value perspective, would I be a holder? Absolutely. You know, dividends per se don't excite me, but hey, I'll happily take them if they're there. And from a total return perspective, this looks good value to me.
Yeah, look, just looking at the PE there, it's around about 10, so it's not, you know, it's okay. All right, so what else has been reported?
Well, we've got, you know, on an extrapolated view, you know, let's talk about Royal Dutch Shell. So many of those similar discussions were apparent with Shell, let's say a year or 18 months ago. You know, doubts over whether the dividend would be maintained, doubts on the strategy. Have they done an absolute shocker by buying BG Group at what appears to be, in hindsight, a pretty difficult time, given that oil prices and gas prices fell not long after that transaction was broached. So Royal Dutch Shell, actually, their numbers today, look, people look at two things. The first thing they look at is, has the dividend been maintained? Tick in the box there. No growth, but it's been maintained. So it's still yielding thick end of 6%, you know, not too bad at all. Second aspect is the debt level, is it starting to come down? And it isn't getting any worse. I think the gearing did come down a little bit, which reflects the fact that oil prices have gone up, and that's helped revenues and profits at some of Shell's, particularly upstream facilities. So Shell's moving forward, benefiting from that higher those higher energy prices. And as we stand today, the credibility of that big BG deal a couple of years ago is improving. And with that comes the share price. And you look at the share price, and I took a look at both the 3- and 5-year share price chart on Royal Dutch Shell earlier today. This level of circa 24 quid is a big old level. And actually, there's been a massive recovery from the dog days of January 2016. So if there's any, if you kind of link BT and Royal Dutch Shell together, if you can maintain your dividend and ultimately deliver on some semblance of a strategy, guess what? You move from oversold to being much more loved up. That's the way the market goes. So, you know, for me, Royal Dutch Shell is portfolio ballast. I mean, it's not very exciting. I think they did the right thing with the BG deal, and I liked the stock at the nadir of the oil markets when people were worried about it. But I have to say here, 24 quid's a big level. I think it's fine for dividend yield. Clearly, they've ticked the box there again. 6% odd is not too shabby at all by any means. So fine for dividend yield. Total return, I think you're in the land of the oil price gods, really. And obviously, we've seen Saudi say the right things in terms of firming up the supply side over recent months and talking about extending that into 18. That's all good news. So a bit of a sweet spot for Dutch at the moment. Would I be chasing it aggressively for capital gain? Not really, to be honest, but it's an absolutely fine hold and dividend play here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I did do, you know, the same sort of thought process last time. I did get involved and invested in Royal Dutch Shell in 2016 when the oil price happened, because I thought, this is cyclical. This always happens every now and again, and this is a chance to take advantage of this macro environment right in here now, because, like I said, the best cure for low oil prices is low oil prices. And so they maintained their, you know, dividend, so I just started scaling in at about sort of 18, 19 pound, and scaling all the way down the bottom, and started scaling in again. Started going back up, and I made a nice little profit, and got paid a dividend along the way as well. And like I say, I'm not out now because I can't see it going a lot much higher, like you said there, really. But there was an opportunity in 2016 when that oil price crash happened, you know, to get involved, get on board. because it's cyclical, you know. Anything else you're looking at?
Lots of reporting companies today. One other one that caught my eye, one we've talked about previously in these chats, is Randgold Resources, the big FTSE 100 gold play. Now, Randgold shares, they're down 5% today. Numbers looked all right to me. However, the production, there was a few issues in quarter three. To be honest, the company talked about these at the previous quarterly update. I wasn't too surprised from them, but the shares have fallen back and they're reapproaching the £70 level. Now, I've been invested in Randgold at different levels for many years now, and I'm still an owner today. My observation of Randgold is two things. Number one is round numbers are very helpful. It's a heavy old share at 70 quid a share. Yeah. And if you take a look at the share price chart over the last number of years, certain big round number levels have been important. I remember a time when you always bought Randgold at 40 quid or 50 quid or 60 quid. Whilst recently you should have taken some profits at 80 quid or if you go back a year or so, 90 quid. So it's these round numbers really matter for Randgold for some reason, perhaps because it's such a heavy share and it's the way people remember whether there's value or perceived value or not. The other aspect is, and this is a little tip from my institutional investment days, I must have been three or four times I attended the Randgold quarterly update, which tends to be held at the London Stock Exchange. I believe it's being held there again today. It happens at midday, so same time as the governor of the Bank of England stepping up to give his spiel on interest rates and whatever. Yeah. And the number of times after that meeting, after I've heard what the companies had to say, and maybe had a quick chat with the CEO in the breakout afterwards, I have bought shares because actually the talk from Randgold, they always give you something in that conference call. It's open to the public. You can listen to it on the webcast. There's nothing secret or smelly about this. This is open public information. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, because it's a busy day and it's a funny time being midday, people sort of catch up more slowly. So I can't tell you the number of times I've been super impressed at the presentation and bought more stock after it. And that's worked out well over the following X weeks or months. Mm-hmm. So certainly 70 quid piques my interest for the potential to buy a few more shares. I'll be listening to the conference call later, seeing if there's a bit of an update on some of the mining prospects. You have to say they're talking sort of a positive story for this year and next year. And strategically, I have to say, when I look at the mines they've got, the grades they've got, the balance sheet they've got, the strategy they've got, they are a company that has consistently delivered, which is why they've massively outperformed all of their peers over the last X years. And I would back them to do it again. So put all that together, I guess what I'm trying to say is if you don't own it, or maybe if you do, 70 quid a share, very, very interesting level. Keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah, it's definitely starting to bounce on this level. I mean, sometimes it's got down to you're right, 70, 70, 68, somewhere around there. But, it's going towards oversold territory. So, and it's always good to have a bit of gold in your portfolio. So
No, I would agree. It's a good mixer and has some different attributes. So this is one of the best protagonists, particularly in the larger cap sphere.
Marvellous, Chris. Good to chat to you. Have a nice week and we'll speak next week, fella.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al.
Yeah, see, should I be saying season's greetings, Justin? It feels like winter down here.
It is a bit wintry. I said that, the wife yesterday said it feels like Christmas. And she said no. I said, okay.
Yeah. it's that bright sort of crisp morning, you know, the sun's out, but a few clouds in the sky, but it's cold. It is very parky outside.
I've got to talk about clouds. Surely there's clouds of the, Alan Green household as far as Andlas is concerned, because they had a release out recently. Final results, board changes.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'll say at the outset, I've had emails from people through our website already saying, "Oh goodness me, you've seen the board changes, the results. No doubt you'll be filling your boots." Well, just to say, yes, I am a shareholder in Andlas Energy. Have been since the company started. Nothing's changed there. Paul Warwick has stepped down. The company's moving from developing the business to operational delivery now. So different set of priorities in place. And Simon Gorringe is the CFO, who is on the ground and is engaged with local management in the region. is stepping up as CEO, and that's probably a sensible move. And David Whitby is now overseeing the strategic development in place of Paul Warwick. So really, nothing's changed. The gas to power projects are still what they've always been. There is still a massive power shortage in Indonesia, and Andalas is working with the state energy companies to solve that. So that's the overall picture. I'm not going to get involved in the details of where the company is. Yes, has it burned too much cash? Has it this, that, the other? We are where we are. I'm a shareholder. End of.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like saying, when is the good news coming? You know, what's going on here? It's now down, as I looked yesterday, it was down about 12%. And the market cap is 1.82 million. There is obviously an issue with cash, which is the lifeblood of any company. There is potential there. Of course there is. But they've gone through a very difficult period for a long period of time. And I'm thinking, when are they going to come out of this period? Because
I was talking with somebody last week who has run several companies in Indonesia, and he said, if you want to get stuff developed there, you've got to go at the pace of the country. And unfortunately, although there is a need there, there's a political structure, and there are geopolitical issues in the mix as well, that just make it very difficult to move these projects forward quickly. And of course, if the project were suddenly came to fruition and a wellhead power project came into play and started generating power straight away and cash for the for Andalas, it would be a different story. And that's where the company's heading to. But unfortunately, given that it's in Indonesia, they can only go as fast as they can go. They're working with the state petroleum company, and obviously in the meantime, the runnings of the company had to be financed, and that's an inescapable fact. Clearly, where the company is at the moment, it's burning cash in order to do that. But let's not forget that Robert Arnott, who was brought in to arrange the project finance, he is now the senior non-exec on the board, and he's involved at an operational level making these things happen. So clearly we want good news, and we want it yesterday. They are subject to the pace of transactions in Indonesia, and I think if you research doing business in Indonesia, that's a well-established fact. You have to go at the pace of the government, and obviously they're working with state petroleum companies, state energy companies, so they have to go at that pace.
Yes. Well, I'm just looking for some relief for shareholders, you know, like yourself, Abby. Fair play. You keep your pecker up, Al. You know, hoping for hope there and some good news. But here we are. Well, it's got to come sooner or later, surely. And I suppose one thing, I mean, you know, that the guys are quite experienced dealing with Indonesia, aren't they? So they must have known whether they were dealing with state, you know, bodies before, whether they knew this could have this much delay or it's going to be this slow, you know, to turn things around. I don't know.
Well, yes, of course, but I think the indications were very early on that these things would happen at a faster rate than they actually have, and of course that's something that the company has financed and prepared for, and then of course things haven't happened as quickly as we'd hoped. They have memorandums of understanding, and they have joint ventures with the energy companies, and they've just got to go at that pace. They are very much at the beck and call of the company. In one respect. On the other hand, Simon Gorringe, who's working CFO, has been running really the locals there who are implementing and helping develop the projects. So he's now CEO, and that's from an operational standpoint, that's a good thing, because of course when these are up and running, he's got that well-established chain of command and relationships already in place.
Marvellous. Anything else you're looking at, Al, apart from Andalas?
Well, yes, we've spoken about this company before, and again, it's just delivered a fantastic performance, really, since we've been talking about it. And I think we first spoke about this over a year ago, but I guess there's a seasonal element here, too. It's a company called Conviviality Retail. CVR is the epic code.
Yeah.
And of course, Conviviality Retail have several arms. They have trade arms, including Matthew Clark by Bendham, that they finished the acquisition of or completed on the acquisition of during the last financial year. They have a number of trade outlets: Walker and Woodhouse, Catalyst, Elastic, Instill, and of course they have their retail outlets, which are Wine Rack, and of course Bargain Booze.
Oh, Bargain Booze.
So as we head towards Christmas and, you know, bargain boots is very much in focus. And,
exactly.
And rightly so. But I think it's a fantastic name still. I think it's a fantastic trading name. But, you know,
Exactly. And listen, if you like
booze... It does conjure up crates of tenant super, doesn't it? And all the rest of it. So.
Well, the thing is, if you like booze, you like it at a bargain. So bargain booze, you know, is a double whammy there. It's a win-win situation. It's booze and it's bargain.
Exactly.
So, and it is, it's essentially, it's a chav brand, isn't it? But it works, you know, parking
booze. It works very well indeed, yeah, indeed. But I mean, let's just take a look at what this company's done over the past year. It's traded at a low of 197p on the year, a high of £4.28. So we were talking about this time last year, and I think we spoke about it again in February. And look at the share price since then. I mean, it was £2.50 when we spoke about it in February, and the shares have sort of getting on for double. Market cap of 720 million. The full year results in the summer, revenues up 85% to £1.5 billion. Margins are up 1.3 points to 13.3%. Pre-tax profits up 147% to 22 million, and the dividends up 33% to 12.6p. So not only are you holding a rapidly rising share and a well-run business, but you're earning a dividend in the process. And the CEO, Diana Hunter, said at the full year results, the company has exciting potential for significant organic growth going forward. And that's just what's happening. And of course, we're now entering that time of year where they're going to sell buckets of bargain booze, which is a great thing, but we're also heading up to a trading update very soon too. The interim results will be published in January after Christmas. I've just been following this share, and really since July when it dipped below the 50-day moving average, it's traded above that. It's come down to test it several times, but with the current trading at the current £4.16, it's bounced off the 50-day moving average at £4.08 on a number of occasions, and this stock just looks very well placed to carry on delivering growth.
Especially, like you say, coming towards bargain boost season.
Indeed.
Anything else, Al, you look at?
Yes, a company that, and again, this is very much in the mould of the type of companies that are identified by the portfolio and stock management system, VectorVest. It's a company called Volex. VLX is the epic code. Mm-hmm. Now, Volex...
Are they dodgy sort of Swiss, watches? No, do you want to buy a Volex, mate? It's a genuine Volex.
You're thinking of Rolex there. but I guess it could be mistaken and such. But no, this is a company that's based in Warrington in northwest England. So, and it's one of the world's largest manufacturers of power cords, harness assemblies, fiber optic cables, and it's got manufacturing plants all over the world. And these products are supplied to consumer reliance and electronic products, data, telecoms, medical, automotive, industrial, transportation, defense. I mean, literally anything and everything. So it manufactures those, I suppose, you know, relatively boring little components that go into pretty well every piece of machinery, every electrical device that's in use and being sold today. So it's a great cash generator. The last trading update was at the end of July, and it said trading remained in line with expectations. Cost cutting actions had led to lower operating expenses, and Chairman Nat Rothschild at the time said that the ongoing improvements should allow us to maintain gross profit margins at a similar level despite commodity price increases. Since then, in August, the company announced a strategic partnership with a Korean manufacturer of automotive harnesses called Nexon Tech Corporation. And we are now in the run-up to the group interim results in about 10 days' time. So, again, you know, I like to look at these opportunities when we're in the run-up to a major news announcement. But the company was flagged up by VectorVest. The company the VectorVest the system flagged up the earnings growth rate when the shares were trading at 42p in June this year. Since then, the shares have gone on. They're currently trading at 73p. The The growth earnings are forecast at 28%, which obviously is excellent. And on the basis of those metrics combined, Vectorvest currently has a price target of 99p against the current 73p. So clearly, if there's a good set of results in a few days' time, we're likely to see the company progress and hit these levels. And again, going forward, just think about what the company does. It's a big cash generator. It supplies all these little components to pretty well every sort of appliance and application you can think of, and it's a great cash generator. And it's these little companies that tend to be cash cows and carry on growing, carry on paying out dividends, and are great little companies to invest in for the future.
Oh, you cash cow. Okay.
Yeah, cash cow.
So, the chart's looking strong there, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It's bunching up around the 72 pence mark, which could suggest is about to be either a move higher or a move lower. And if they're doing well, then maybe higher.
Well, I think the results in about 10 days' time will be the catalyst for that. So I would expect to see some buying in the run-up to that, and we may well see the shares push higher. And obviously the results are good, then 99p has got to be the next stop.
Get yourself a nice Rolex, son. That's what people like.
Get yourself a nice Rolex, yeah. Well, no. Go down, buy yourself... go down to Bargain Booze and buy a nice Volux on the way out.
Exactly. Lovely, Al. Thanks for that. So, and alas, Volux and conviviality, they're all covered. Thanks so much. Speak next week, Al.
Sure, speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Contago Holdings, CGO. It's Brian McMaster, who's on today with Jan Garda. He's a very busy man. At four, Herencia Resources, H-E-R, her, is a ticker there. At three, you get Oil and Gas, UCOG. At two, Ascent Resources, AST. It's very rarely that's out of the top five. But number one most followed company today, or in the last 24 hours, is Rehoboth Resources, RBD. Okay, top five most liked analysis are as followed. Strategic Minerals, SML, Drilling Results, Hans Camp Cobalt Nickel Project. At four, Greatland Gold, Notice of AGM and Annual Report. At three, Independent Oil and Gas, IOG, Results of Competent Persons Report on Harvey. I assume that's a field, an oil field somewhere, rather than a bloke. It'd be very odd. At two, Management Resource Solutions, Holdings and Company. And number one most liked RNS released over the last 24 hours is from Asia Met Resources, ARS, and it intersects high-grade copper below the BKZ polymetallic deposit, and we covered the chart with Nicola Duke on the earlier podcast. Check that out. You can see the video as well at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.